The first round of games in the group stages of this year's Africa Cup of Nations finishes when Mali take on Egypt in Port-Gentil on Tuesday night. The teams have met 9 times before. 6 of those games have been friendlies. The last time anything was at stake came in the quarterfinals at the 1994 Africa Cup of Nations in Tunisia. Mali won 1-0 and eventually finished 4th. Since then, they've twice finished 4th. They were 3rd in 2012 and 2013. Egypt have flourished since that quarterfinal showdown. They've won the title 4 times, but since their last triumph in 2010, they haven't qualified for the tournament. Uganda are in the same group as the Pharaohs, as the Egyptians are nicknamed. The Ugandans haven't been at the Cup of Nations since 1978. Back then, the Cranes, the nickname for Uganda, waned in the final to the host Ghana. But the Cranes have soared back into the spotlight. However, by all accounts, it's been a difficult flight for the men of coach Milutin Shredahevich, who's nicknamed Misho. RFI's Kampala correspondent Gronya Harrington takes up the post-qualification story.
On the 4th of September, they beat Comoros 1-0. Kampala went absolutely crazy. It was a home game in Namboli Stadium. They filled the stadium with 60,000 people, and the capacity of the stadium is 42,000. So the reaction was just incredible in Kampala. The noise could be heard all over town. And then just a couple of days later, the atmosphere came crashing down a little bit as Misho sent out a series of furious tweets saying that he hadn't been paid and saying that he was going to take legal action against FUFA, which is the Ugandan Football Federation. And it transpired that he was owed, it was reported, about $60,000 in salary arrears and in payments for things like flights home back to Serbia, which he's due as coach, and also bonuses for winning qualifying matches, which both players and coach are due. And so FUFA admitted that they hadn't paid him, that they owed him money. They didn't say how much. Eventually, they came to an agreement. FUFA said that they hadn't paid him because they'd prioritized what they called meager resources on getting the team through the qualifying round. So everything was focused on the team and the qualifiers. And so therefore, unfortunately, they hadn't been able to pay the coach.
Effectively, what you're saying is that the coach worked for free to get his team through the qualifying round.
That's exactly what he said. He said he did it for the love of the game and for a commitment to the team, and that he had sacrificed personally. And he also said, that his family back home in Serbia were seeing these news reports, and they were thinking that he was making a lot of money. And so that's why he felt like he needed to come out publicly and say that he wasn't being paid, because his family in Serbia thought that he was lying to them about not making any money in Uganda. So it obviously became a family feud as well. So this was part of the reason, he said, that he had to come out publicly with this.
Well, bust-ups aren't exclusive to the Ugandans. Just before they were due to leave Harare, the Zimbabwe squad was involved in a spat with the country's football association over appearance fees and bonuses. The players were told they were being greedy, especially given the country's economic plight. The players retaliated by snubbing a banquet in their honour. The brouhaha calmed down after skipper Willard Katsande ruled out boycotting a tournament for which no Zimbabwe team had qualified since 2006. Such is the prelude to the showpiece event organised by CAF, the Confederation of African Football. But is this really the prism through which we should be gazing on African football? Peter Aleji is Professor of African History at Michigan State University. He's also written and edited books on football on the continent.
Well, clearly the complexity and the richness of African football can't be reduced to just these negative incidents. But there is a long history of conflicts over payment. You know, in 1974, for example, when Zaire qualified for the World Cup in West Germany, there were these squabbles going on in the dressing room that apparently fed into a kind of players' strike in that famous game against Yugoslavia, where Zaire lost in almost comical fashion, 9-0, and really set back the status of African football several years. And they do continue to occur far too frequently, and this not only in men's football. For example, the Nigerian women's team that just won the African Championship in December had to conduct a two-week protest in Abuja so that they could receive the promised bonus, they were supposed to receive from the Nigerian Football Federation. So, it's really time for these national federations and their officials to stop treating their players and their coaches in such an unprofessional way. Because I think in the end, the happier the teams are with the financial setup, the more likely it is that they'll perform on the pitch and that positive results will come out.
Well, there'll be battles royal over the next couple of weeks as sides strive for ultimate supremacy. Will Côte d'Ivoire be able to retain their crown? Can Ghana win the title after so many near misses? Who'll be the dark horse of the event? Such questions are bound to arise, but maybe the issue of structure will come to the fore. The Africa Cup of Nations is the oldest continental football tournament. The first competition took place in 1957 in Khartoum. Hosts Sudan were joined by Egypt and Ethiopia for the event, and the Egyptians won the first of their seven titles. For the 1992 competition in Senegal, the Cup of Nations was expanded to 12 teams, and the current 16-team format was introduced for the 1996 games in South Africa. By contrast, the European Championships, which started up in 1960 with four teams, is now a 24-nation fiesta. 4 days before Gabon played Guinea-Bissau in the opening match in Libreville, world football's governing body FIFA rather stole CAF's thunder. FIFA said it would increase the number of teams from 32 to 48 from the 2026 World Cup onwards. So is there a case for a bigger Africa Cup of Nations? Peter Aleji.
Well, it depends how you look at it. I'm not a big supporter of kind of supply-side football. But on the other hand, if the qualifying stages were to be curtailed, then I think it would be a rather positive development. If you bring, say, roughly half of the member nations of CAF to the tournament, then there's no need to have these interminable and sometimes quite challenging qualifying rounds that we have to endure today. And I think one must look at it in a couple of different ways, but certainly not adding to an already crowded international match calendar should be paramount. And that's why, if you look at the expansion of the World Cup to 48 teams, I'm not as opposed to it if the qualifying rounds are trimmed, because frankly, I think there are too many matches as it is, too many matches for fans to pay attention to, and this shows in the crowd numbers, attendance figures at many of these international matches, but also too many matches for players to compete in, and the number of injuries, the level of commitment that they show seems to be quite questionable at times. So I would say that the main problem in the African context is an expansion of the tournament would make it very, very difficult for most nations to be able to host it. You'd be looking at probably a handful of countries essentially being able to host it on rotation, probably with South Africa and several of the North African countries in pole position.
Gabon co-hosted the 2012 Cup of Nations with Equatorial Guinea. 5 years ago, Libreville and Franceville were the venues for the matches. This time around, fixtures will be played at those sites as well as in Port-Gentil and Oyem. It was estimated that Euro 2016 brought in 1.2 billion euros to France in tourism and spending directly related to the organisation of the tournament. Gabon 2017 isn't likely to rake in anywhere near that kind of money for the hosts, but at least the politicians will be happy, as Gronje Harrington in Kampala explains.
Oh, everybody's on this bandwagon. All the politicians have reacted, so the president, of course, is fully behind them, and so is the First Lady has been tweeting also, Janet Museveni, who's also in the cabinet. And of course, every politician in town has been jumping on the bandwagon. both the opposition. It is the one thing that unites the opposition, Forum for Democratic Change, and President Museveni's NRM party, is this tournament and the hope that the Cranes will win.
Is that a pig I see flying with those cranes? That's it from Sports Insight. From me, Paul Myers. Ciao.
It was